Welcome to the Overdrive Outdoors Podcast,
your source for everything outdoors.
Let's kick it into overdrive.
Overdrive Outdoors Podcast, brought to you by Predator Hunter Outdoors. Whether you are new to predator hunting or looking to upgrade your equipment, Predator Hunter Outdoors will have you hunting after the sun goes down. Carrying a full line of lights, night vision, and thermal optics, along with tripods, calls, mounting systems, and more, check them out at www.predatorhunteroutdoors.com or on Facebook at Predator Hunter Outdoors. Use promo code OVERDRIVE2021 for 20% off your order. Want to lengthen your time in the field and shorten your scouting time? Not only does the HuntWise app show you property boundaries, landowners' names, and in some cases even their phone number, but using the app will show you the wind direction on the map of the place you want to hunt. And the HuntCast feature shows peak movement times for various species, including predators. Get the HuntWise app at www.huntwise.com, the Google Play Store, or the Apple App Store. For only $59.99 a year for Pro or $119.99 a year for Elite. Use promo code OVERDRIVE20 for 20% off an annual membership.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Overdrive Outdoors Podcast. Hey, this week I wanted to tell you guys about a tripod I've been using for a little over a year now. It's the Night Snipe Elite Hunter from Predator Hunter Outdoors. This thing's made of 40mm carbon fiber. It's very light, but it's very sturdy. It's got a weight rating of 67 pounds, so pretty much no rifle you put in this can break it. So if you're in the market for a new tripod, go check them out at predatorhunteroutdoors.com. Hey, this week on the podcast, we are joined by Brad Latrell, the founder of the app Go Wild. And if you haven't heard of Go Wild yet, I suggest looking it up in your app store or whatever device you're using. It's essentially social media for us hunters, us fishermen. They've got an awesome rewards system, and Brad is going to go into details on that. I suggest just giving it a listen. We appreciate everybody who downloads again this week. We appreciate everybody who's been following for so long. Please leave us a rating and review on whatever platform you're listening on. We really appreciate it. Let's get into this episode with myself, Kevin, and Brad Latrell. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Overdrive Outdoors Podcast. This week, it's me, Josh, again, co-host Kevin Rott. And this week, we have the founder, correct?
Yes, sir.
Of Go Wild, Mr. Brad Latrell, spelled differently than Mike Latrell, said the exact same way. But there's apparently a connection between Kentucky and Michigan. Brad, how the heck are you?
Good. Thanks for having me, guys. I'm glad to come on and chat a little bit.
Absolutely. We appreciate you taking the time out of your Monday evening. 8:30, my kids just went up to bed. That's the easiest time for me to go sit down and not have running feet above me.
Yeah. No, this is perfect. I walked away from the final steps of bedtime and came and sat down with you guys. So did I. Yeah.
Brad, why don't you tell us first about you? I mean, you told us before we started recording, you grew up in Kentucky. Were you always into the outdoors, or did that come later on in life?
Yeah, man. I mean, I grew up pre-internet, which I feel like dictated a lot of what options you had, you know? I mean, we played video games some growing up, but it was, an hour here or there. It wasn't like my life. I mean, I grew up playing outside. I grew up off-roading. I grew up hunting a little bit. I small game hunted with my dad after I turned 13 or something. I don't know. We fished a lot though, bank fishing. I wouldn't say we were, you know, now I've gotten into the industry and I've seen how hardcore some people are. So I'm always kind of hesitant to say like we were hardcore into any of this stuff. It was just kind of casual, into camping and, off-roading a bunch. I rode everything growing up and crashed everything. Everything you can think of, got scars all over my face and knees and everything. But grew up, you know, playing outside. And when I got back into or got into hunting more after college, I didn't do any of this stuff besides fish a little bit in college. And then after college, started hunting again with my sister. And then really started getting interested in whitetail hunting because it was so hard and it was such a challenge and different than anything I had ever done. And still think it's one of the hardest things you can pursue. You know, not just shooting any deer, but like trying to get a mature buck is just incredibly difficult. At that time, I would have shot anything coming and going when I was getting into it because I was terrible and I didn't understand a lot of the stuff that, you know, now you can watch a few hunting public videos and get a feel for some of the stuff. Like that information just was not digitized yet when I was starting to get back into hunting. And this would have been like 2010 to 2014 or so that I started really getting into whitetail hunting. And it sounds like not that long ago, but I mean, literally the hunting public, born and raised. I mean, Meat Eater was on, when I first started listening to Meat Eater in 2016, they were only on episode 30 or something, you know? So like none of this stuff was as mature as it is now, which really leads into the Go Wild story, but I know we'll get there. But like my outdoor journey was really coming back around to those roots after college. You know, I went to the University of Kentucky, got a journalism degree, which is always interesting. People don't see that coming from the tech CEO, but this wasn't my background. It was my passion. So there's a difference. But yeah, I mean, grew up outside and grew up in one of the most, you know, adverse and poverty stricken areas in the country, which I think is, you know, builds good character and builds good storytellers. As a reason all the great songwriters are coming out of Eastern Kentucky right now, it's because you learn to appreciate tough times and have perspective. So, you know, when you don't, you end up with pop music.
I understand that.
So you mentioned you started your journey pre-internet days. How old are you?
I'm 35, but I grew up in Eastern Kentucky. So I was in fourth or fifth grade by the time we really even, I remember the first time I sat down at a computer in school that had internet. It was okay. Fourth grade. I did not get we got a home computer with dial up. I don't know, before, I remember whatever it was not useful. And this was still the era of trying, like people didn't know what to do with the internet at home. And I remember the first time I really started doing anything with it was using Napster to download music. I'm a huge music nerd. And the first time I heard Led Zeppelin was through Napster, because otherwise we had to go out to disc jockey at the mall and buy, like that was the only CD store in town. Grew up in a small town. And so a lot of my, like there were probably, I'm sure in California, there were people that, you know, 5 years before we were using the internet more regularly than that. But, you know, there's this saying that when the world ends, I'm going to go to Eastern Kentucky or go to Kentucky because they're 20 years behind. And there is truth to that. And I did live through watching, you know, with music, for example, you know, now music becomes popular and the world can enjoy it together as it blows up, but that's just not how it worked back then. You know, it took a long time for information to get to these areas that I grew up 2 hours off the interstate. So you know, we kind of did live slower, you know, and it still is slower. I mean, it still is, but it was just very different back then.
There's nothing wrong with being a little bit slower. I mean, we go every year, we try to go up to the UP, the Upper Peninsula, at least once a year for a hunting trip. And as soon as you cross there, it's like people not doing the speed limit. They're going way under or taking their time.
Yeah. Waving at every car.
Right.
It's like pulling over for funerals. It's a different world, man.
Yeah.
You can go miles and miles without seeing people or houses or anything. Yeah.
You got into whitetail hunting hardcore after college. I mean, did somebody in your family always whitetail hunt, or did you eat venison growing up, or was that something you did for yourself?
I did not grow up eating venison. My dad hunted small game a lot growing up when he was a kid, and my grandmother would always take the squirrels and she would eat them. And so he never was even interested in the fare of it all. He would just take them to her and she would eat it. And it was the same thing when we started hunting. You know, we weren't really, I think a lot of it was we just didn't know what to do with it, you know. And that's a lot of what I've learned is that's huge barriers. People don't understand how to cook wild game. So my uncles and my cousins always went out every year. They went to deer camp. I never was allowed to go to that. I don't think I was ever invited to go to that. But you know, they would load up and be gone for a week, and they'd come back with bloody deer hanging over the van or whatever they took that year, Bronco or whatever, and they'd hang them up at the garage there and start cleaning them. I remember all that really well. I was around it, and I didn't really understand it though. I don't know how hard it was. It just seemed to me that they all left, they went and had a good time and drank a lot of beer, and then came back with deer, you know, and that's what I thought it was. And then when I started doing it, I'm like, oh my God, this is so much harder than what I thought, you know.
You can't do both at once.
No, yeah, ill-advised.
Yeah, frowned upon.
Yeah.
After you got into deer hunting, how long did it take you to be successful?
So the problem was I was hunting with a guy who had property. I ended up starting with this with somebody that had property, had access, knew what he was doing. And so when I first started the first couple of years, I'm like, this is easy. This is great. I'm good at this. I like doing this. And I wasn't killing like 180 inch deer, but you know, after a couple of years, I'm like, okay, I went from like a button buck to a 6 point to a 7 point or whatever. And I'm like, I'm getting better. And then I'm not able to hunt with that guy. And I realized that this is a lot was being handed to me. You know, it's the same thing with like turkey hunting. You know, I can bring somebody with me and they can sit down. I do all the calling. I know where to go. I know where to scout. Like that part, like the picking up the gun part is easy, right? Like that's all the hard work is done before that. And so I haven't built out a timeline to like go back and figure this out, but it's probably 2 years unsuccessfully doing this by myself.
Okay.
I mean, I got skunked hard on public land the first year in Eastern Kentucky, and then I got skunked again. And the second time I like really invested in trying to learn and get better. And then the third time, it was 2016. I shot an 8 point after, this was the year I thought of the idea for Go Wild. And so that deer that I got that year was really special to me. It was my first deer I got by myself. He was the biggest deer I'd ever shot at that time. And he's still maturity wise, he's still probably the oldest buck I've ever killed. He was a pretty mature 8 point. And then from there, you know, I don't know, I've shot like a pretty nice 10, and I shot the biggest bodied deer I've ever shot in 2020, and he was only a 7 point, but like, for the love of God, this was a 200+ pound deer, which in Kentucky is huge.
Yeah.
I've got his neck roast. I just realized I hadn't cooked his neck roast. Half of it is like the size of my thigh. He was ginormous, which is exciting for me because I care way more about cooking the deer. Usually the antlers lay in my garage for like 2 years, not kidding. I forget about them, and then I'm cleaning up the garage and I'm like, oh, I never put that Euro mount on anything. So most of these deer are now at the office though. But yeah, I got way hardcore into it. Now, you know, I think I've pretty much killed a deer every year. I haven't gotten skunked anymore. I still have embarrassing moments like last year. I accidentally tagged out. I don't know if you guys saw that story on Go Wild or not, but like I accidentally tagged out last year. Kentucky, you only get one tag, and I hadn't hung cameras. It was a busy year. I have a property I can hunt, 70 acres or so. It's good deer property. There's usually a couple big ones out there, and I had been seeing what I thought was this really wide 10 point walking around a couple different times, and so I was in pursuit of him. I had multiple interactions with him. I had passed on shooting him the first day of gun season, final minutes of shooting hours. And I was trying to walk out with a little bit of light so I didn't spook anything, because I was coming back in. Of course, I'm walking out. I just climbed out of a tree stand. I'm kind of huffing because I'm carrying this heavy bag. I climbed out of a tree, and then at like 70 yards, there he is, standing there looking at me, but he's chest up. He's over the hill, so I can only see chest up. I didn't have a good vital shot. I could have neck shot him, but I was looking through this gun, and it's like, you know, 70 yards through a rifle, panting. I'm like, this is all kinds of bad news bears waiting to happen, and I'm going to be out here tracking an animal at night or like waiting on it in the morning, and the coyote, everything was kind of piling up in my head. I was like, I'm not going to do it. And he runs. So I'm at that point, I'm like, this is great. He's out here still alive. I'm going to come back on day two and have a shot at him. Well, long story short is there was also this 8 point out there that I had passed on several times in archery season. And I see him early in my hunt the next morning, and he comes out and he's kind of weird, tilting his head towards the stand, and I couldn't really tell how tall the tines were, because if you think about it, when you tilt towards, you can't see. Yeah. And so he comes out, and by the time there's a certain point where he came out that I can't shoot anymore, to go into the neighbor's property, and I knew somebody was hunting down there, so it'd been incredibly unsafe. Well, he gets to that point, and then he does this like weird roll up of his head, and I see this is the 10 point I've been looking for. So I just passed on him. I had 15 yards where I could have shot this deer, and I thought it was the deer that a different deer. And then I watched him go over the hill, and then I hear gunshots. So I'm assuming that deer's dead, and I hear a car come up to load up a deer. I am just like raging pissed at myself, right? And so all this time passes, and three or four hours goes by, and this is miserable weather. It's like high 30s and raining and windy. And I finally decide, because again, I am in it for the meat. Like, that's my number one. I'm like, I'm shooting whatever. I want to blow my chance at a buck to get a doe. And then once I secure the freezer, I'll be happy with trying to ride out and get a few more shots at something out here with antlers. Well, I had a deer come out the same spot where the other one went down, and it's a doe. And I check 110 yards. I check for antlers three times. I remember doing this three times, and I'm talking down, you know, pulling my gun up and down, and then pulled the trigger. She was moving fast, and I couldn't get her to stop, and it's super windy. I kept like bleeding, and finally I was like, ah! I just shouted basically to get this deer to stop moving. And I see she stops, I shoot her. Long story short is I shot a spike that had the tiniest of tiny antlers. And I'm talking like tiny, tiny antlers laying flat against his head.
Oh, wow.
And when the deer's ears were up, I've got a picture I can send you guys. It's actually on my Go Wild profile. If somebody goes, it's fairly recent trophy. When the ears were up, you couldn't see them. So I learned a hard lesson at before I tag out on a buck, I will never shoot a deer at that distance again. I had passed on this deer six times in archery season. I had seen him, and I had video of him. I have video of him on my phone alive right under me at like 3 yards, you know, just down the tree stand.
Yep.
Walking by. And it's so funny because when his ears went up, you couldn't see that he even had antlers. So when I found that deer, I was like, all right, I got meat, all's good. I roll that deer over and I see those antlers, and words were said, probably not suitable for a podcast. So I'm still, all this to say, like, I still wouldn't say I'm a good hunter. I can go out and get meat, but I'm not like a good trophy guy, you know?
Well, before I ask this question, I will say, Brad, you don't work for the DNR, the conservation department, anything of Kentucky, right?
No.
Okay. So in Michigan, in order to be considered a legal buck, each
3 inches.
3 inches. Is that Kentucky too?
No, it's anything you can hang. Everything I read on, I didn't call. Maybe I should have. But if you can hang basically a key ring on it, it counts. So I think it's an inch.
Huh. All right. So you could have like barely over a button buck become a buck.
Yeah. Yeah.
A button buck.
It's a bad rule.
Yeah. Everything here under 3 inches can get a doe tag.
Yeah. No, I even paid attention when I called it in to tag it to see what they were going to, because they walk you through the prompts, and the prompts said 1 inch or over, I think.
Okay.
I never did ask a game warden. Maybe I should have. I don't know. At this point, I think I ended up hunting. I probably went out once or twice after that. I didn't get anything else. So I'm going to run out of venison for sure this year, probably before season rolls back around. But, you know, it kind of is what it is.
So you only get one antlered tag in Kentucky?
Yep, for the whole state.
And then what about doe tags? They pretty.
In this zone here, I can shoot them until the end of time.
Okay.
And I mean, they're so overpopulated in this part of the state. You where I'm from and where I hunt, sometimes you can't even take a deer and rifle or a doe. You can't take a doe and rifle. You can take a doe in archery, but I think it's limited to two. I can't remember. I haven't looked that rule up in a while because it's been a couple years since I've hunted down there in archery. But it varies quite a bit from one end of the state to the other. I'm in the end where all the bourbon's made, so we got all these cornfields, and they just come up here and get fat and happy.
Yeah, that's how you get those 2 pound deer.
Yeah, that's right. Oh yeah, I'm sure he was eating the corn.
Cornfields and bourbon, they're out there.
Yeah, just for comparison on that, I didn't weigh him. He was over 200 pounds because my body weight alone was not enough to get him up. Normally, I've never had a pulley system because I'd always been able to pull him up. Even I had one that was 160 pounds dressed, and I was able to get that deer up fairly. I mean, not easy, but like okay. This deer, I couldn't even get him off the floor. I had to change my whole game plan on even butchering this deer in my garage. Yeah, like wow. That was a massive buck. Well, I bought a pulley after this last time. So now I've got, you know, then I went and shot this little deer that like basically I just like one-handed and threw up into the back of my SUV on the cart that I have on the back of there. So it's kind of funny. I had this pulley system pulling up this deer that weighed nothing.
Those are the best eaters though.
Yeah, it was. It's really good.
Have you ever tried smoked venison?
Oh, dude, I smoke venison all the time.
What's your favorite cut to smoke?
Purely to just smoke, probably the football roast.
Okay.
It cuts up so well. I mean, it kind of ends up being like this prime rib look to it, you know? But I smoke stuff all the time, and you know, I've pretty much smoked most of the ham cuts you can think of.
Have you ever done an entire front shoulder?
No, we were going to do that. I hunted down in Texas a few years ago with Jeremiah Dowdy, and we talked about doing that, but it looks, I have a guy I'm friends with, his name's John, and he's got the cookbook Venison. And John's got a recipe for doing whole leg that I would love to try, but I've never committed to it because that's a lot of mouths to feed.
Yeah.
Once.
Yeah. I did one. I do a couple every year, but I did one probably 2 years ago. Smoked it at 225 for like 3 or 4 hours maybe. And then I wrapped it in foil, but I covered the whole thing in grape jelly.
Oh, yeah.
It was like candy.
Yeah, I bet.
Fell apart, delicious. So if you ever
consider
that, grape jelly makes it perfect. I don't know what it was about it, but it.
And it wasn't one of the. Was it a cut or was it used the whole leg?
I used the whole front shoulder. I cut them off right behind the shoulder blade. Cut them off at the knee or the elbow, and
put
the whole thing on there.
That's awesome.
It works good, and yeah, when you have a big family gathering or something, and everybody wants venison. There's a front shoulder because otherwise that to me is just grinder meat.
Yeah. I'm kind of funny. I don't grind as much as most people do. I end up with a lot of those big chunks and I'll smoke them sometimes even just individually, like with little cuts. I'll save like what most people would toss, but I'll smoke it and then dice it up. And I've got a chili recipe that I use those in, and it's a smoked chili recipe too. So you end up with like chunks of meat, but they're not grind.
Yeah.
And it gives it a really unique, it's memorable. So if you ever got like a chili competition and you come in with what, I mean, it's almost like somebody took brisket and threw it in chili. It seems like that when it's done and it's next level, man. And then you're smoking the meat and then you end up smoking the chili too. I smoke the chili in a cast iron Dutch oven with the lid off and just keep folding in that smoke. It's hard to beat.
Nice. Well, let's get into Go Wild. How did Go Wild come to be? I mean, what made you say we need something out there for hunters and outdoorsmen, sportsmen?
Well, we already answered the first half of that question in that I really sucked at hunting. And for me, I'm like, how I would read on forums. First, I started buying magazines. And the problem with magazines, you know, you're reading content that assumes you know 30% more than you know if you know nothing, right? Like when you start with nothing, you know nothing. And so they would talk about playing the wind and I'm like, play it how? Like someone just tell me what that means, right? Because I didn't understand when you set up in a stand how to think through, you know, crosswinds or, you know, wind in your face. I'm like, which direction do you want it? And it sounds really obvious now, like I get it. But like I went waterfowl hunting for the first time. And it's the same thing all over again. It's like, well, which direction do they come in or leave? Like there's all that, you have to know this stuff, right? And it's like, it's this stuff that's so basic that it gets overlooked in content often. Now, again, we have a lot of content creators now who, and the podcast volume, everything's changed a lot. But at the time I would be reading this stuff in magazines. I'm like, there's gotta be a better way. I start looking online And I'm finding forums, and the forums I would read about for like 15 minutes in a forum sometimes. And I find out they're talking about deer in Texas. I'm like, I don't have cacti. I don't know what do you all, you're throwing corn to try to pull deer out of a cactus. I don't know what that's like, right? Like, I'm never going to know what that's like up here.
Yep.
Funny enough, I did end up hunting in Texas a few years later. And it was totally different, right? Not applicable. So there was that experience. And then there was the experience of, it's 2016. Pre-2020, we all would have agreed that that was the nastiest year for social media ever. I think 2020 kind of took the cake on a lot of different bad activities, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the Trump-Hillary election. Trolls have just become like out of hand. I was still on Facebook and Instagram at the time, and I had been harassed for posting hunting pictures on Facebook, even by an old boss that I had. So it was to the point of like, I don't even want to share the stuff I'm, if I get anything, I don't even want to post it anywhere. And that's not fair either. Like, I want to be able to talk about it with people that get it. So all this stuff kind of culminated one day, and it hit me like a ton of bricks when I remember where I was standing in the exact field I was standing still in 2016. It was August. And I had the idea of, you know, like, what a shame you can't share. There should be a place you can share and you can connect with other people locally. And so that idea sat with me. I had a 3-hour drive back home to where we are now, Louisville, live in Louisville now, Louisville, Kentucky. And thinking about it, you know, I decided I have been entrepreneurial my whole career. I mean, I got fired for trying to start a company on the side one time. And my new company that I'd gone to, I told them at some point I'd be leaving to go start a company. And so I knew I had support. I started researching and just was really shocked at what was out there. I mean, at this point, you had Strava for cycling, you had Runkeeper for running, you had beer apps and design apps, but you didn't really have a good place to go and talk to people about hunting or fishing. What's funny about that is, I said, good place. There's been tons of apps, dozens upon dozens. I used to have a folder on my phone of 40 different apps that had existed at some time in this space. what happened a lot was you'd have a wealthy hunter. They have an idea just like I did. I wasn't the first. And they would go pay an agency to build the app, and they think it's just going to make it rain. Well, it turns out running a technology company is really expensive. It's really time consuming. It's a full-time job. You can't do this on the side or you know, or whatever. It's got to be full-time, and you got to have full-time employees. And so through, I guess, sheer stubbornness, I've stuck with it, and we've made it work, whereas a lot of the companies that have popped up don't exist anymore. And in fact, I went back and looked at our recent, I don't say this stuff to gloat, I just, it's to call out the fact that a lot of companies had tried before us and have tried since then. But I was looking at our competitive analysis in 2017 that we were doing, looking at the landscape, and I think 3 of those companies out of the 15 we looked at are still alive. You know, it's tough going, but I still, again, was like super passionate about this. I thought we could make it work. I thought it was interesting that Silicon Valley just completely ignored the hunting industry. You know, I mean, like, it was an obvious, like, why is no one building? I mean, they're building apps for literally everything. You know, yoga, which is a fraction of the size of the hunting industry alone. Forget throwing in fishing with that too. So I just kind of realized that they weren't going to do it. You know, they were actually part of the problem for us, and that they were letting it run rampant. So we made a big business bet that if Facebook wasn't going to police the harassment of hunters, they were kind of already making a stand in that they were going to side with the group that didn't want hunting on the platform. You guys know we've watched that play out over the last 6 years. It's pretty much gone the way we thought it would go, but even worse. Like, I wouldn't have predicted some of the things that have happened. But you know, the idea, the concept of the platform really came down to, I'm really bad at hunting. I want to get better, and I want to have a place where I can share those stories with people like me.
Yeah. And that's awesome, because like you said, Facebook is definitely not hunter friendly.
No.
I just got out of Facebook jail after a 30-day stay for talking about shooting coyotes, but I'm deleting comments almost on a daily basis from anti-hunters threatening us, threatening my kids, talking about how they're going to murder us or kill us or hope we die, blah, blah, blah. But that stuff doesn't get deleted but you talk about shooting an animal and you're right in jail you go.
Yep. I quit Facebook before the Facebook jail was a thing. So I've heard about it though. I've been off Facebook for probably 4 years now. I think I deleted Instagram, I think last year.
Okay.
Kind of just walked away from all of it.
So how since long? You,
go ahead.
Since you started that original idea, how much have you grown? How much has Go Wild grown to now?
Exponentially. I mean, it's been up and down. You know, there's been, the company started as a social platform, and then we saw an opportunity to build activity tracking apps. So we thought that the next big thing was going to be like a Strava where you could track on a watch, right? So we did that, and it didn't really take off. In fact, by the end of the year, it was clear it had failed. And so we had just launched this gear functionality at the end of 2019 to where you could tag gear. If you guys have been on the platform, you know what that is today, what it turned into.
Yep.
But we built this on the back of affiliates. So we weren't selling the gear. We were linking to Bass Pro or wherever, Academy Sports. And people loved that. They loved being able to see what other people are using. And so we really started to lean into that to sell advertising. And I'll get back to your question in a second. I'm not avoiding it. We were growing really well through the end of 2019. Then COVID hit, and first thing that gets cut in a recession is advertising budget. That was our business model. So we had a really hard Q2, made almost no money, truthfully. And then we had to kind of figure things out. It was like, well, if we want to stay in business and not be one of those 40 apps I had on my phone, we better figure this out ASAP. And so we decided, well, we have all the data on what people like. We know that people are looking for Garmins. We should see if Garmin will let us be a retailer. It worked out. They said yes. And so we started building out a retail presence. And that has grown, like that launched in the fall of 2020. The growth of it was up and down because we didn't know what we were doing. And it was good through March, and then we kind of had some up and down. But since the end of that summer in 2021, we've just been off to the races. We hit record revenue off of the e-com recently. We're hitting record growth right now off of turkey season and bass fishing. We're still not into the like millions of daily users or any of those numbers. We don't unveil our numbers, but it is deceptively large. Like at this point, people, a lot of brands want to go work with an influencer because they have 100,000 followers. But truth be told, by the time you look at like what their reach is, you know, maybe they're hitting a really good percentage of those, which would be like 10 or 12%. I mean, Go Wild's just like infinitely larger in terms of reach than a lot of these groups are. And again, I don't say any of that to brag. I say it because the product has finally gotten to where it needed to be. People love the reward system, and we should probably tell people what this is in a second, because we talked a lot about it. We haven't told exactly what it is. It's a nice little teaser for you guys.
I've used the rewards.
It's like when you start a movie and they show you the ending, but you got to figure out how you got there. That's basically what I'm doing to you right now. But you know, the rewards functionality, you can unlock rewards for loading in trophies, and you get discounts, you get free hats and shirts and stuff like that. And it has resonated really well, along with I was on Houndsman XP recently with Chris Powell, and the Houndsman audience, get you and talk about harassment. These guys get beat to death. Yeah. So they came over and, you know, we've boomed with the Houndsman guys, and, you know, we've done really well with trappers. We probably have the largest active community of trappers in the world. I can't imagine there's a bigger one. But that part, like the growth since we introduced rewards and the ability to buy gear has been phenomenal. Again, we don't give exact numbers out for competitive reasons because of obvious, you know, benefits there, but it's been really good since that pivot to selling gear. And now before that, we definitely had ups and downs. You know, we're a startup and trying to figure it out as we go.
Do you think the reward system is what's bringing in a lot of people right now?
100%. Yeah. You guys kind of joked about it before we started. I am pretty much the face of customer service.
Okay.
So I get a lot of complaints if something goes wrong. And I also know when things go right. And so one of the biggest complaints right now is that, hey, I sent my link to somebody and I didn't get points for it. And that's because a lot of people right now are trying to share the app. So the way it works, I'm gonna do something real quick just to tell people what it is. GoWild's a social commerce platform. You can share any amount of your outdoor life there. And you along the way, you're getting points. If you share trophies, it pins to your profile, you get points. And these points started off to show people who your thought leaders are. So a person that has 50,000 points on GoWild probably knows what they're doing, because that's a lot of time logged outside. And so it was a way to signify the quality creators without having to lean on followers. And so I still love that part of the platform, because it takes a long time to get that kind of credibility built up. And yeah, it's a little bit of honor system, but you know, we also will delete people for uploading fake content. The community kind of polices itself, and we throw out the bozos. So you have this social element to it, and then you can unlock along the way. You're getting, I mean, I've had like $100 off of Garmin. I've had 25% off Muck Boots. You'll get $100 off Vortex. I mean, these are pretty significant discounts. And we lose money on some of that stuff individually. The goal, obviously, is to help people learn about our platform to where they'll shop through us. And overall, we make money. But we donate a percent of our proceeds from the e-com sales to Raise Them Outdoors. It's a nonprofit camp that teaches kids to hunt and fish and shoot. And so you have this ecosystem of shopping, sharing, and then getting rewarded along the way. You just asked about the reward. Okay, so rewards links, what I was saying, people get points when they share. I think it's 200 points a friend or something. So people will often message me and be like, I sent it to Steve and I didn't get any points for it. A couple things happen there. We track with like pretty good accuracy. It's not foolproof. Sometimes it doesn't work. A lot of people though, if you send them a link, they just go to the app store and search for it, right? It's like they end up looking it up themselves.
Yep.
And so that happens too. But yeah, the rewards, we know, we can see the volume of these shares coming through and the people coming through those links. And you know, it's the biggest it's ever been, because people are getting properly incentivized for it now. It's not just a, hey, help us grow. You literally can unlock gift cards and t-shirts and stuff along the way.
Well, and you unlock a $10 gift card as soon as you start an account, don't you?
As soon as you put your first and last name in when you create an account. Yep.
Yeah. And I was just actually looking through the store yesterday on the app and looking just for fishing stuff. And I was showing my brother some of you guys, is you got good prices on like Gary Yamamoto soft
plastic. Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. I have no idea, honestly, what we're adding right now. But I walked into the warehouse today and I mean, they had like probably 30 new products they were loading in on the fishing side today, too. So like that's just compounding and compounding and compounding. By the end of summer, we'll have about four times as much product as we do right now.
Nice.
So, I mean, it's like exploding on the inventory side.
Yeah. I know, I just wore my Go Wild orange shirt there to work.
Awesome.
I got off my rewards. So,
dude, that's officially a vintage shirt. We had to stop doing the orange one because the supply chain's so screwed up. We can't get that color anymore.
What color is the new one?
I think they're going to be gray. Same shirt design, it's just great. But they won't go back out to like, it's only new people that are coming in.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I think we had to do gray because no, you can't buy those.
No,
those are only reward shirts. We couldn't, like, it's so crazy right now with the supply chain. Like, I'll get people that are really mad at us. They're like, this brand of boots out of stock and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, dude, you can't find them anywhere. That's why we're out of stock on them. Like, you know, it's the manufacturer is out of product. So we are still we're 2 years out of COVID and it's still impacting supply chains.
Well, Kevin has his own gun shop basically on the side, and Kevin, you got distributor problems just the same, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, like he was saying, I mean, I've had product on order for customers for well over a year and just can't get it.
Oh,
someone requests something and you try and find it for them and you can't find it anywhere. I mean, yeah, it's all over still.
Yeah, we have some products that people, you know, they buy it, and by the time the order goes through, the product is gone.
Yep.
And so we have, yeah, it's out of stock, so we have to contact them, and they'll say, well, when is it going to be back? It's like, well, the manufacturer's telling us 6 months, and that probably means 9.
Yep. So
if not longer.
Yeah, and on the firearm side, man, I don't even sell the guns, but I know, because we work with Federal, so we talk to those guys quite a bit, and it's just been, I mean, insanity. I mean, people are putting in orders. You guys normally order a quarter ahead, right, for, like, most inventory? I mean, is that pretty normal, like 90 days out before COVID?
I mean, I really don't keep an inventory. I'm just a small business.
Okay.
I made a special order.
So I've talked to some of the big box stores, and they would tell us, like, yeah, we would order a quarter at a time. So you're ordering 90 days ahead, right? Mm-hmm. And then it went to 6 months, and then it is nine months. And it is at SHOT Show, I was talking to guys who were placing orders for next summer. So that's 18 months ahead.
And you'll be lucky to get some of that stuff.
Yeah.
Probably.
Well, because a lot of people are getting really pissed over the firearms or the hunting rounds, because some of the extremity rounds got harder to find, because if you're a gun manufacturer and you're selling the ever-loving crap out of 9mm, why would you not just keep making that instead of, like, your, you know, Nuance 30-30 or whatever it is over, I'm just, who knows what round, but, like, these rounds that don't sell big time, you want to sell them because it keeps loyalty to your brand, but, you know, when 9mm is selling out the second it shows up, that's what you're going to make, right? You know?
Yep.
It's been interesting, though.
When you go on the app and you, let's say you want to load your gear, because you guys have the ability to load, like, your whole gear bag, everything you carry out there.
Yep.
If you search on there and something doesn't come up that you use, does that mean that you guys do not sell that product, or does that mean that it's just not been added, nobody's added it before?
So if you're trying, if you're on that gear screen on add your gear, we have more than 500,000 products in there. I think it's around 550,000. We don't sell anywhere near that.
Okay.
So a lot of that is data that we've scrubbed from affiliates or whatever source, but, like, I'm looking at it right now and I can see a lot of people search for Sitka. It's one of the first things that pops up here. We don't sell Sitka. If I look for Sitka right now, this is probably going to be a product that's sold through, like, a Shields or an Academy or something like that. We used to work with those companies on the affiliate side and promote that, and that's how we got into e-com. But now all the new gear that's coming into that feed, we sell it. That's our goal, right? Is to be able to sell all of this inventory. Now what you can do, and this is kind of what part two of your question was, you can add your own gear. Yep. So maybe you got a something that's not made anymore, but you still want to have it in your kit. Maybe it could even be like a handmade turkey call that you want to load into your turkey setup. You actually can add it through a button at the bottom, and then the app will walk you through adding all that information in there. And I think it will, I'm sure if I sit here long enough, I could find an example, but I'm pretty sure it'll pull in other people's custom uploads.
Okay.
When they search. I can't remember off the top of my head how that works. Those products are in there if you do a custom upload. But the goal with the custom uploads is really more than anything just to allow you to show off your gear, even if we don't have it, because we're not going to have most things. I mean, we have more inventory in there than Bass Pro, Cabela's, and Amazon Outdoors combined, but it's still not enough because there's just so much out there, right? Like, look at, like, duck hunting, just something as niche as duck hunting. I mean, there's thousands upon thousands upon thousands upon thousands of calls, right? And so we'll never have it all, but the way we approach it is finding the brands that have the most, like, trying to onboard their data sets, and also to sell. Like, Primos is a good example. We're trying to onboard Primos right now to have more of their products because they cover so much stuff, right? That'd be an awesome addition.
Yep.
So that's how we approach finding, or, like, trying to decide what brands to put in.
I know I've added several brands of my gear on there that weren't in there before, just because, you know, like you said, people want to see what you're using, what you tag in your posts and everything else. So I know I've added like Shiver Shield, I added my OSS suppressor. I think when I added my ATNs, those weren't in there at the time.
Yeah, we've added some ATN stuff, but sometimes we add things and it still doesn't cover their whole, you know, we don't sell everything that ATN makes. I don't remember how many we sell, but yeah, it's challenging. We kind of, I think we invented this concept of tagging gear like this and having your content live on that page. Maybe somebody else is doing it in the same way. I don't know. But I bring that up not to brag about it, but to say like, there's no rule book or guidebook on how to do it. Like people will literally contact me on LinkedIn and say, hey, what books are you reading to learn how to build these social commerce sites? I'm going to do this for tennis or for motorcycles or whatever. And I'm like, I don't have a book, man. I don't know. We're making this up as we go, right? It's like nobody's ever really thought about having social interactions with products like this before. You can't do this on Facebook and Instagram. You know, it's totally different. So yeah. We're slowly figuring it out, though.
So if you go into the app and you just do like a search for a certain product, does that pop up with everybody that's got that in their gear list?
No, if you search for a product in the shop, it's only going to be stuff we sell.
Okay.
Now, if you're adding to your gear, and this is where it gets nuanced, right? Because this is, there's two different functionalities for gear. You can add it to your profile or you can shop. If you're on your profile and you're trying to add gear to show off to your buddies, because effectively what your gear list is, it's like a dude's truck window, right? The back of the window, you got all your labels on there. I shoot a Matthews bow and I've got this camo, right? Like that's what guys do with their truck windows, right? You put all the stickers on there for all the, to show off how much money we've dumped into our gear. Yeah. That's essentially what your gear list is on Go Wild, is you're kind of chest thumping a little bit. You know, you're able to show off your gear that you've worked really hard to have. Or some people look at it as like, I'm going to show what I have and see what I should have, because sometimes I can get feedback on it. But if you go in that way, we give you around 550,000 products that you can pick from. You can search and figure all that out. But if you hit the shop tab, it's all stuff that we're able to sell and put in your hands. And that's where we donate 1% of the proceeds to Raise Them Outdoors.
I think another facet of that too is if someone sees someone out there that's doing something they enjoy a lot, like they see some guy that's successful all the time with elk hunting and all that, and they want to know, okay, well, what kind of gear does this guy use, so they can get an idea of what maybe they want to look at. I think they look at that as well.
100%.
More like an educational thing.
Yeah, that's how I use it. I went last year and I was getting ready to buy some turkey calls. And before I pulled the trigger on the ones I had pulled up, I pulled out my phone and I looked up three or four turkey hunters that I respected on Go Wild to see what brands they were using.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good idea. I mean, you see that on the other social media platforms too, but I think on Go Wild, it's definitely taken it a couple steps further in terms of.
Yeah. Most guys can only what? They put it in their bio. It's like sponsored by, and then, right, you know, word vomit of brands. Right. But even then, let's say First Light. Okay, you use First Light. Which pattern? What is it, the Western stuff? You on the Eastern side? Like, there's literally hundreds of products, right? Like, it's still, you telling me you use First Light for whitetail would not tell me enough information to know what to go buy. So like with Go Wild, it's very clear. It's like, no, here's the product and you have a link to go buy that product, even if we don't sell it. Like those ones that the 550,000, almost all of those have links to some other site that's not us, that you can still help somebody find that information, you know?
So what does it take? And you don't have to go into too much detail, but like from the start of you wanting to begin the app to actually have it functioning, what did it take to that point and how long did that take?
So we, from idea to founding team, I had the idea, like I said, in August, 2016. We had, at that point, I go home and I research for about a month and trying to figure out what I wanted to call it. What does it even take to build an app? Cause I didn't know, I'd never built an app before. I was working in advertising. I was a creative director, worked on hundreds of websites. But this was a lot different. So I got three co-founders to come in with me. So there's four of us total. We had our first meeting in December. I think we met New Year's Eve. We would meet on holidays while we were still working our other jobs, because that's the guaranteed days we had off to meet. And so we started working on nights and weekends. We had the goal of launching it by Labor Day. And so we bootstrap built, meaning we paid for and launched it on our own. I started the whole company with $500. And from there, by the time we started getting close to launching, we did raise a little money that fall. We this is something you could Google and figure out. Like, we've raised money to build the app and hire a team. And you can bootstrap this stuff, but it takes longer. It's putting a lot of, if I had funded it myself, I couldn't have done that. I wasn't of means to be able to do that. But it also, my time is my investment into it. So it helps me diversify a little bit of that risk by pulling in investors' money. You also get strategic advice. But from that first go, which is kind of your question, from idea in August 2016, we had it launched by September of 2017 on iOS, just on iPhone though.
Okay. And I got Android. I got to assume there's all kinds of channels you got to jump through, hoops you got to go through just to get it even out there to people.
Yeah, man. I mean, I keep saying at one point I'm going to write a book on like how to do this from a business standpoint, because there's not really good documentation on everything that goes into building a company like this. But a lot of people think like, oh, a bunch of nerds get together and they build an app and they code it themselves. Like, well, no, we have to have a company, we have to file taxes, we have to have a CPA, there's a whole bunch of stuff that's going on in the background that's not the fun stuff. Like, I get to do a lot of the fun stuff, like talk to you guys and go to the trade shows and go to bars for after parties and stuff, and all that's fun, right? People don't see all the back end stuff of having an HR department and having ways to figure out all this stuff. We didn't have all that through 2017 or even 2018, because we were still like a 5-man, 6-person team. But as you start to grow and everything, and we've become a real company, we have an office and we have healthcare benefits and stuff. And it's a lot more than I think, even right now, when we started talking and Kevin kind of talked about how I'm still dialoguing with people, we have a small vibe, like we feel intimate, which is by design. But we have to run it bigger than that. We're not in the basement anymore is kind of the thing we have to remind ourselves. I mean, I used to ship shirts for the company right where I'm sitting right now. I had my printer sitting here. I'd package up 20 boxes of people that had bought shirts over the last week, and I'd take them to the post office. And, now that's not even covering like a couple hours worth of stuff that's going out from Dan and Derek at the warehouse. It's just scaled up a lot,
So when you first came up with this idea and you guys were sitting around talking about it and word started spreading, more people started talking about it, did you have many people that were detractors that were like, yeah, that's a lousy idea? Or did you have more people that you'd say, man, that we really should do that?
That's a really good question, which not very many people have asked, if anybody. I've had detractors mostly on the investor side who look down on the hunting industry. Back in the early day, especially, man, we were unaccredited. Unaccredited has a different meaning in that space. We were unproven, and so nobody trusted us. They like basically had that, why you guys? Why would you guys be the ones to pull this off if nobody else has? I had investors tell us, like, laugh us. I had one guy get so mad he called my other investors to tell them they were stupid for investing in us. Wow. All because we were a hunting company. The hunting industry has a lot of baggage in trying to do this stuff. Trying to build a tech company in this space has not been easy. I think there's probably a few categories I can think of that would have been harder. I have friends that do CBD companies and you wouldn't think that'd be that controversial, but it is. They've dealt with a lot of the same kind of feedback that we have. On the hunting space, I've had some, mostly in the early days, of people laughing at us because we were small. People It is funny to me because we get anytime you do anything, people just compare you to the influencers in the space now. It's like, well, your all's Instagram has 56,000 followers while Hannah Barron's over here with the million. And I'm like, well, Hannah Barron didn't build her own tech company. And I know Hannah. Hannah's very sweet. I'm not knocking Hannah. But like, that's a stupid comparison, right? Like, I don't do what Hannah does. Hannah doesn't do what I do. Right. Like, why don't we just compare us to every NASCAR driver that's out there too? Like, I don't go 200 miles per hour on a track with a heart rate that's like about to explode either, right? Like, that's a, it's just, they make these analogies because it's the only person that they know in the space. And there's been a lot of unfair comparisons like that, that we have to just, I mean, you just take it on the chin and keep going, you know. It's not a whole lot I can do when an investor is telling me we're going to fail. Like, I now don't want to work with that person. I'm like, God, get me out of this room. Mm-hmm. So we've had our detractors for the most part. It's been like subtle support in the hunting industry. There's been people, there are a lot of people who like it, like the idea of it. And I'm speaking strictly from the industry side, not just users. But the, you know, they'll give you their verbal support, but then when it comes to like actually working with you or using a budget or getting product on there in the early days, I'm still speaking in the early days, mm-hmm. you know, they were skeptical, they were hesitant. And so it's taken a long time to kind of show people that we were up to snuff. Just as an example, one of the first people I met in the industry was Kevin Orthman, who at the time was the chief or the executive director of the Professional Outdoor Media Association. I met Kevin and he convinced me to join as a corporate partner, $500 or something. And in my perspective, I was like, I'm going to get this directory of names that because I have no contacts and this is going to be awesome. And from Kevin's perspective, he's like, I'm going to take this kid's $400 or $500 check and never see him again because his company's going to fail. He told me this years later because me and him got to be really good friends and he's still a dear friend of mine. But I thought that was funny because that's how everybody looked at us, is like, we're showing up to these things. They don't even think we're going to be back next year because they think we'll fail. And Kevin told me when I showed up the second year at conference, he said, oh, I guess this kid's not going away, right? And then now I'm on the board of POMA and, you know, I've kind of gotten the respect, at least, even if people aren't using the platform, they respect what we're doing. You know, the same group, that's how I got to speak at SHOT. So like, it's kind of built up, but it's taken time. And honestly, Cody Rich, I don't know if you guys know him with the Rich Outdoor Show. He's got a really big podcast in hunting. It was probably one of the longest tenured podcasts in hunting. He told me when I got into this in 2017, he's one of the first people I met. And actually, I think he said Jim Shockey told him this. He said, it takes 5 years for anybody to take you serious in the hunting industry. And before you hit that point, it's just everybody laughing at you and expecting that you're going to die, like, or fade away, basically. And it's been that. It's not been easy, man. I mean, there's companies that I think still think that they're going to, like, one day click and Facebook is going to explode and that's going to be their growth. Like, they're so focused on where we've been that they haven't slowed down to realize that, like, I mean, forget Go Wild. TikTok's eating their lunch, right? Like, TikTok is, if you're still trying to grow your Instagram following and not on TikTok, you've missed the boat, right? Like, you didn't get the point. You didn't watch things, right? And so those are the kind of people that have laughed at us. But in 2 more years or 5 more years, if they haven't changed, man, they're going to get left behind. And so a lot of that's like, I've tried to stay above the fray. I've tried to just kind of keep my chin up. But we've had a lot of detractors. And I do some of these startup podcasts where people ask me a similar question about raising money or investors and whatnot. And I can, you know, I have a hard time answering it without kind of being a dick and dragging some of these investors through the mud too. It's like, I try not to do that, but I mean, it's just not been the friendliest of experiences. It's been really hard. Got a lot of war stories from it.
So why do you think that is? I mean, if you look at the hunting, fishing, outdoors industry in general in the United States, we'll just talk about in the US, it's huge. I mean, if you look at, I mean, what they say, there's what, 40 million gun owners in the country. You have at least probably that many hunters, probably twice as many fishermen. you have archery, you have everything out there. Why do you feel there isn't that support for that industry? I mean, have you heard anything that's kind of giving you any insight to that?
The same problem that we face is there's always, I mean, almost by anything, there's going to be 50% split at least on anything, right? I mean, I could go out and say right now, hey, I'm starting a company for electric cars and whatever it is, whatever that is. I've now got half the room split because some people are, you know, pro oil and gas. They don't like electric, and or they, there's another group that thinks that electric's just as bad or worse for the environment than oil. Like everything. There's no clean cut on anything. And for what we do, we kill animals. It's complicated, right? We like guns. It's complicated, right? They kill people. They are involved in shootings. And you guys, like me, would say, well, yeah, those people weren't responsible. They're not indicative of most gun owners. Like, we would all have a rational conversation about that. But we don't get that luxury with this group. You could do this with, like I mentioned, CBD oil. We could do this with drugs, legalizing marijuana. Whatever your topic is, there's always going to be your detractors on each end that are going to make up 10 to 20% on each end of the spectrum of the super pro or super against. And then everything else is in between. And it seems like, depending on the topic, that in between maybe 40% on each end, and maybe in the middle is a little, you know, maybe it's just 20% haven't made up their mind yet. Hunting is one of those things, man. Like, there were stats originally when I started this, I used to read that like 80% of the country was okay with hunting. Like, and I think that's probably about right. They don't have a whole lot of opposition to it. Sometimes I wonder like how much I'm in the vacuum of this all and my perception has changed. But I will say that from an investment standpoint, there are people that just see us as a risk. They see us as potentially selling guns one day, which I don't think we will. I don't know. Maybe we would do. I don't know. But even that answer right there, I don't want to deal with that. Oh, you guys got firearm content on your platform. You might be teaching people to use guns. Somebody might shoot somebody. They're going to sue you guys. I don't want anything to do with that. Like, it's a slippery slope argument, but that's the kind of stuff that makes people want to stay away from this industry. But I'm with you, man. Like, it's not like it's not a cash cow. There's a huge industry to be had here. And I think it's one to be proud of. I mean, nobody else is contributing into conservation like the firearm industry. And hunters, as much as we like to brag, we're leaning on the backs of the firearm industry right now. I mean, it's all these shooters that are paying in through Pittman Robertson, you know. But that's something to be proud of. But when you start talking to groups that are, you know, irrationally fighting some of these fights we see in legislation, you know, they are really successful at getting their message out there through channels that, while smaller than they were 15 years ago, they still have reach. And then, you know, that stuff hits Twitter and it can be the world, you know, it can get to the world like that. So I don't really know that I gave a good clean answer on your question, but that's kind of how it is. It's like, it's not clean and I don't really agree with a lot of it, but that's the kind of stuff I see.
I think that's the same question. I mean, sometimes we can be our own worst enemies. I mean, you've seen that, especially when it comes to social media. You see so many people that their egos get involved or, you know, what have you, where it's more infighting than it is uniting towards, you know, putting a positive light out there and unifying the sport and all the people involved in it. I mean, if there was a way that you could get more people to unify in the outdoors industry, I mean, I really don't see any way you could stop them, you know, and that's where I think we lose ground to like anti-hunters. Sometimes it's the legislative type stuff like you were talking about. It's just because it doesn't seem like we unify enough to fight those battles like we should.
I agree. I wrote an article about this, what we're talking about, and it was in rebuttal to the Matt Ranella article that came out around Christmas. Nice. Yeah, you know, you guys probably saw that, and like everybody was talking about it, and I wrote a response mostly because it was getting begged to from, because like, hey, Matt Rennell is talking smack on hunting and social media. You own a hunting social media company. What's your opinion on it? So finally I sat down and did it, and I didn't even want to do it because I knew it was going to take forever, and it did because I wanted to do a good job on it. But, you know, I think there's a lot of things that he said that are right, but there are a lot of things that were wrong too. And one of the things I disagreed with most was that we should just take our voice out of the fight altogether, which was very much what he was saying. We should stop following hunting influencers, stop posting on social media, stop sharing any of the content, because groups like the Humane Society take that fight to us, right? They use our content against us. To me, no one's ever gained share of voice by shutting up, right? Like, we need to reformulate our story, like really think about what we're telling. And the pieces like his that go viral, like, I wish talked more about, you know, sensibly telling, sharing that story, because there's evidence out there. There was a study done in, I think it was the 90s, that predicted that hunting would be gone from Wisconsin by 2050 through legislation. And people hear this stuff and they think it's poppycock. It's a bunch of BS. It's not going to happen in my state. But then, I don't know about you guys, but I'm a member of Sportsman's Alliance. And if I look at Sportsman's Alliance's blog or their emails they send or the magazine, it does not take a genius to look at the legislation that's being proposed by the Humane Society or even agreeable to by the current administration. You know, they're looking at a lot of this stuff right now that's being funneled in by these animal rights groups. And you look at New Jersey, you look at Washington and Oregon and all these bills that are popping up, and it's not the death of 1,000 cuts. It's the death of maybe 20 blows that could take your hunting season away.
Right.
You know, the if you're a trapper or you're a houndsman, we're not even, you're on maybe a 5-year time span on some of this stuff.
Yep.
And so, you know, what you said, Kevin, is dead on. We got to wake up and get together. Because, and we don't have time to figure this out. We got to go now, right? Like, we need to get together now. And yeah, dude, you might shoot a crossbow, and I don't think that that's necessarily as sporting as my compound bow, but who cares, right? That should be the attitude. Right. It shouldn't be like, you're not a hunter because you're taking out my deer population. And that sounds like a fictitious example.
True, though.
Sometimes I think, like, sometimes I'm like, no, you're just using that because, like, people say it all the time. But I've seen it play out since then. And because there for a while, I kind of talked myself into, we all talk about this crossbow thing, and maybe it doesn't really exist. But I started seeing it bubble up again during last deer season. People are still fighting over freaking crossbows. Meanwhile, which is exactly what the Humane Society wants. They want us in fighting because now we can't agree on anything. And you know, the best way to weaken us is to split us amongst ourselves. And then, you know, they come in with a well-funded strategic communication campaign, and all of a sudden it's like, holy crap, where'd our bear hunting season go? It's like, how did this happen? And it's like, well, they pulled the rug out from under us, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Just happened with wolves, right, Kevin?
Yeah. I mean, that's been a battle here in Michigan for years. I think we had our first wolf hunt that I remember was, what, 2013, 2014, and we had one season, one wolf hunt, and immediately got shut down. They had a bit of a legal battle over it, and they got a judge from another state to put them under federal protection. And then just last year, they got that federal protection lifted. They were talking about getting a season going, and they were, you know, trying to figure out all the logistics, and they wanted to do a public opinion survey, which I don't understand why.
People
and
then were getting excited.
And then they got another federal judge out in, what, California?
Yeah.
To put them back under federal protection again, which effectively shut it down.
And well, you guys are a great example of stupid legislation. Like, I still don't understand why you can't dove hunt.
Yeah, neither can we. Or Sandhill Cranes.
Sandhill Cranes, dude. I came up there for a goose hunt. And we couldn't get freaking geese because sandhill cranes are everywhere. You guys are overpopulated with these things like rabbits. What is up with that?
Yeah.
You can't shoot them.
You know,
and the I know. Dude, like three of them come in and push 60 geese away. And you're like, what the hell? I mean, and three was a very few, right? Like, it only took that many, though. Like, apparently, I haven't been around those things a bunch, but apparently they're like the bullies of the air. Like, it was crazy.
I would love to be able to eat one sometime and shoot them. And the thing is, like, the farmers around here can get damage control permits to shoot them, but you're not allowed to eat them. You have to leave them lay in the field. How wasteful is that?
Really?
Now, why not put out?
Yeah, because then there's value to it. Like, in the government's eyes, there's value to it if you're able to eat it, which is stupid.
Yeah, mm-hmm. then they're just teaching you to waste the animal.
Right.
If you can put it to good use. I mean, that's just like coyotes. That, if you haven't followed along far enough, we got into this through coyote hunting. That's where Overdrive Outdoors basically started, was with us coyote hunting. But I still get asked why I skin them. And I'm like, because even though the furs are worthless monetarily right now, how many have we given away, Kevin? I mean, I gave a half a dozen away to a guy that's just trying to learn taxidermy. If that can go to a better use, I would much rather do that than just leave something to rot.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. But back to Go Wild, because we keep saying that we keep talking hunting and fishing mostly, but there are so many more trails to Go Wild. And you call, basically your timeline is the trail, right?
Yeah. So there's the home screen, which is kind of like your personal dashboard, the trail mix, which is your personal curation of content. So when you sign up, you can pick within 90 seconds, you'll be onboarded. When you sign up, you get all these options on what you can follow. And you can go back in, just pick whatever you want, and then you can go back in later and change them. So to change them, you hit trail mix, tap trail mix up top, and then you can see all the trails on the right, tap that right tab, and you can go in and follow or unfollow. I follow everything because I just think it's super interesting to, actually I just realized I wasn't following waterfowl apparently. But you know, I follow everything because I think it's like one of the coolest things about this platform is all the stuff I've learned. Yeah. I've learned about beekeeping. I've learned about foraging, cooking mushrooms. I've just learned insane houndsmen. I've learned tons of stuff from these dog guys, and I've been around dogs, but not understood how much work it was until I really had this platform. And so on the trail mix, we have an algorithm, and it looks at, you know, all the content out there at this minute, and it brings together what it thinks you would like. Now, one thing that's cool, you can go in, tap that trail mix again, and you can hit buddies. And now you're only going to see content from people you follow, which is cool. Now I hate this comparison, but like, it's a Facebook for the outdoors. Now it's like getting closer to that because you have a stream of your friends, right? But the coolest thing about Go Wild, and part of why we built it this way, was that you didn't have to be friends with people to see their content, right? You see this now with like TikTok is doing that. Like, that's how TikTok works, is you don't have to be friends with people. They try to figure out what you like, and then they put that content in front of you. We do the same thing, and we've done it that way since the beginning in 2016. So the next screen, you have a post screen, and then you have shop. So, you know, the platform is fairly simple. I do get complaints of from some people who are either older or are just super used to Facebook. It is different. If social media didn't need stuff to be different, we wouldn't be building this thing, though. You know, it's like, I don't think different's a bad thing.
No.
I think shaking it up a little bit and giving you the home screen and, you know, going with a content-based model is good. And so, you know, but yeah, that trail mix is going to be your collection of all the stuff you follow.
Yeah.
You guys, go ahead.
I think that's pretty cool because, like you said, you can choose what to follow, just like on Facebook. The people who follow our page really don't even, a lot of them don't even like hunting, but they follow it. So you don't have to click follow if you don't want to see something.
No, no. The interesting thing is, like, we thought we were going to have the cold start problem when we started this, where there wouldn't be enough content to fuel the app. We'd never had it. But I'm glad we didn't know, like, you don't know what you don't know. And so by solving for the cold start problem, we actually just created this cool environment where now you can follow topics, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm learning about stuff from people across the country or sometimes across the world. There's guys in there that post from New Zealand, you know, or Australia from hunting. Yep. And I find that to be really cool. There's you can also, if you're in the trail mix, up at the top right, there's this little radar thing. If you tap that, it'll show you content just from your area.
Yep.
Hot tip. Like right now, if I go into turkey hunting, because I'm going turkey hunting in the morning, and I'm kind of curious what the turkeys did today, right? So I'm going to go into turkey hunting and hit that. And now I can go through, and I'm seeing people from, like I see that Joseph Staggs from Kentucky just loaded 15 minutes ago. He put a trophy in there, and he said he got it done in 15 minutes this morning.
Congrats, right? Joseph.
Yep. So, but like I can see what I'll do sometimes in turkey or deer season is go in with this near me button. And now I can see people will log stuff like, oh, I think the rut's here. You get real time field reports with this thing, man. And I'm looking at stuff. Every piece of content I've seen has been posted in the last few hours, 3 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, 1 day, 6 hours. It's active. That's the point, right? Like you're seeing, this isn't like, you know, a lot of the old apps we used to look at competitively. I mean, it was like 2 weeks ago, a month ago. And even some of the ones that are still in existence today have some features like that. And they're old, it's old content. Go wild, man. It is, that trail mix is 2 days old at most usually. And most of it's being populated instantaneously.
You guys have any data on like the age of the people using it?
Yeah, we do. It's, and I can't remember the exact range. My co-founder Zach would be the best person for that. He's a data scientist, but it's primarily in that probably like 20 to 30 range. I think he calls it 18 to 35.
Okay.
Is the biggest window. And then that 35 to 45 is our second biggest window. We saw a big surge with kids recently because you guys were asking about rewards. Like the kids found out about the rewards and they love it. Most of that's on the fishing side, but like we're really heavy on that 18 to 35 demographic, and it's mostly male, but we do scale skew a little bit more female than at least the hunting industry. So that's something.
Yeah, I think I was just looking at our analytics the other day for the page, and it's like 92% male and the rest is female. It's like, that's a drastic difference between who's where.
Yeah, we have usually about 15% female creators. What's funny is the female's content does way better.
Like, oh, yeah.
No, it's not. Like, I say that, and then I get that response, and I realize how I frame that up. We don't really have like the gun bunny type stuff that you see on Instagram. I think, honestly, I think women are just more thoughtful than guys and they create better content. I'm generalizing there. And, you know, there's some people you want to talk about, like different sectors of the country. I'm sure some would roast me alive for some kind of stereotype in there or something. But like, I just think that's true. I think women are just generally more thoughtful than men. Guys are like PB. Bass, fish, like they just load in their stuff and they throw up the lamest caption sometimes. And I say that, and like there's still really thoughtful guys. Like our guy Derek that works for us, Derek's awesome. He just logged his turkey that he got yesterday, and it's like five paragraphs of awesome turns and twists of stories. So I don't mean to pick on all the guys. There are guys out there, but like in general, women just tell better stories than guys on our platform.
Yeah, they last for hours.
it's great content though. It's like when we've run analytics on you know, do a quadrant analysis of like post how often and engagement, it's like 70% are women, and we've only got 15% of the platform that's women. It's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. I know one of the women from Michigan that we follow and talk to quite a bit, Heather Iverson, she's on there, and she just did a nice video. I'll have to see if she put it on Go Wild yet, but I know she's big into foraging and just did a nice video on foraging. I don't know. Did you see that, Josh?
Ramp butter.
Yeah. Making ramp butter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's cool. I'm familiar with her. I've seen her.
Yeah. She puts out some really good content.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. She's very heavy into the outdoors.
Tessa Fowler from Wyoming, phenomenal photographer of wildlife, and she's a hunter. I know she posts on there and she puts out some really good stuff. So yeah, I mean, it's like you said, I think they tend to put out some really good content.
Yeah, for sure.
What do you do to keep the anti-hunter crowd from infiltrating Go Wild?
So I get asked that question a lot, and I can't, like, I can answer it, but I also can't, because if we ever tell how we do stuff, then they would be able to hack it.
Yep.
We have protocols set up. We have things set up to monitor a lot of different things. I mean, in a lot of ways, I want to be the uncensored platform, right? Like, we do try to work towards that. There are still things that we do have to monitor to be able to even be in an app store, right? Like, they require you to have content moderation policies and all this stuff. We have automation built in around if somebody uploads pornographic images, it's pretty much coming down instantaneously most of the time. Yep. Because we have, like, Amazon has a lot of this stuff built in for developers that you can build in. Like, they can measure with a certain certainty that this is a set of boobs. It's like, they, you can build that stuff in, right? And so we have some of those protocols set up with imagery. We do this with a couple of different, it's basically artificial intelligence and machine learning that we use. Again, this is my co-founder. And I'm trying to say as much as I can about, like, answering the question, but also not give away, like, what we're doing exactly.
Yep.
But essentially, we're monitoring images and captions. Even, like, all that stuff may flag a post. It never gets deleted by a computer. It's always a human review. Yes. So eventually, like, we do a review to see who that person is, or, like, what their intent is. And there are things that we look for that I can't, that this is where I get in trouble. I can't say, like, what we look for.
Yeah.
But there are things that we have noticed through trends that a human reviewer was pretty much going to delete you for if you are trolling and we see these things. So there's that. That's not foolproof. I think at scale, with a really coordinated attack, we'd probably be vulnerable because you don't know what you don't know. We've had small attacks, but, like, nothing major. So it'd be interesting to see what a wide scale attack looked like. I think we would do okay, but I don't know. I don't know until it happens. So
we'll just hope it doesn't happen.
I mean, you're bringing up something that, like, keeps me awake at night. For years, when I would leave for vacation, I would tell people to call me when the vegans attack. Because it is one of the things that's, you know, a really coordinated cyber attack is no joke. I've been reading these cyber books lately. I don't know, I guess because I like giving myself anxiety. But, I mean, you can't compete against a computer that's built to we had somebody come in and build a bot one time, and it kind of shook us a little bit to our core of realizing how, like, fast that stuff can happen. Huh. We've got protocols in place now that, like, it can happen. Like, we can regulate it pretty quickly, but I don't know, man. I mean, that's, you're not asking something that we haven't thought of or that doesn't, like, literally keep me up a little bit every now and then.
Well, I'm sorry for your lack of sleep tonight.
That's all right. That's what the brown water's for.
Understood. I gave that stuff up 14 weeks ago tomorrow, so I just look at you.
Power to you, man. No, I can respect that. Sorry to rub in your face. I'll turn my screen off during the next sip.
You're good. I don't mind looking at it. I just can't taste it anymore. I mean, we've taken up an hour and a half of your time. I have one final question. Kevin, do you have anything before I ask mine?
I do have another question, but go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask, have you ever dabbled in coyote hunting?
So, no, and it's kind of funny because I was just talking to Derek, who I mentioned a second ago about this. I've pulled on coyotes multiple times when hunting and never shot one, usually because they're crafty and I'm in a tree stand and they see me. It's usually during archery season that I've pulled them. I don't think I've ever had one in my scope on a rifle or I would have shot them. I, however, also, like, highly respect the coyote. I don't, you know, a lot of people, like, put the wolf up on the pedestal and, like, this is my spirit animal or whatever. I don't do that with the wolves, But there's something about the coyote that I just think is really cool. And I'm not like an anti predator hunter. I think what, like, I'm not at all. But I don't have any amount of desire to shoot one.
Okay.
And part of it goes into that, from what I've read, and this started with Coyote America, which is like got a little bit of hunter bias to it. I'm sure you guys have heard of, if not read it. Mm-hmm. But it's an interesting book that lays out a good case against hunting coyotes, and that it makes it worse. And I've since then read some stuff that just seems like that may be the case. And if nothing else, it points to, like, we probably don't know. And so I haven't really gotten interested in it because of these things. And it's also like, I am so food driven. That's kind of the third thing. And then you can eat them. My friend Jeremiah eats them, and I've talked to him about it. And this is why I would probably shoot one in like peak or like late deer season, because it's cold and they're not like scavenging. But all that to say, some people who are hardcore coyote hunters are like, now they're done with this guy. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying I'm like anti coyote hunting. Obviously, the predator stuff on our platform pops off, and we're selling a ton of thermals. Like, we're trying to get more into that side. I don't have any moral opposition against it. It's just something I haven't really gotten into. You know what I mean? Like, there's things I would still, like, if one, I'm going coyote or turkey hunting in the morning, I'd think about it. I don't know that I would or would not shoot one. I guess that's where I'm at on it. It's like I don't know that it makes that much of a difference, and I wouldn't eat it. So that kind of gives me, like, that's two strikes against me.
You wouldn't eat it? Come on now.
Well, I don't know if I would or wouldn't. Like, Jeremiah has told me shooting one outside of like winter, the meat is questionable. And I don't know if that's true. But he says they scavenge. And this is a guy that will eat almost anything. Like, my buddy Jeremiah will literally eat anything. And he's the one that told me, he's like, no, you can cook them, but you want to shoot them late in deer season, if you're, or like in winter, when at least if they're scavenging, it's not spoiled. Cause he says otherwise they're not good. So, like, I don't know.
I haven't had one that was really great yet, but
yeah, he makes chili with them, and chili and jerky.
I've had jerky that was really good.
Yeah, I could see it being good.
Yeah,
well, you guys hunt them a lot though, right?
That's pretty much.
So with the population, do you see that, like, after a good thumping that they go down for a while?
Me personally, I could tell you in my own area, I do believe the population is down because landowners don't call and complain about them nearly as much as they used to. I've actually got one landowner where I've hunted for, I don't know, 6 years, 5 years now. Kevin, you know this farm. When we first went out there, even using red lights, how many would we see in a night? We'd see 10, 15 in a night in certain areas. Wow. Now that landowner in particular almost never calls me anymore. I just go hunt it if I'm out that way and want to hunt. But he doesn't have the problems he's always had. He doesn't even hear them like he always had. Right around my house now, if there's as many as there always has been, they've definitely learned to keep their mouth shut because they don't talk anymore around here for me. But I think if you keep on in certain areas like I do, because I like to stay local on weeknights, so I'm always hunting real close to home, I think you can do some damage to them.
I think what you're saying is right. What I've read is you have to keep at it.
Yeah.
Which is what you're saying you do.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I don't ever stop.
Yeah.
What's that, Kevin?
I said it's a maintenance program.
Yeah. Pretty much. Well, I mean, there's some landowners where you'll hunt them once a year, and there's others that I have that call me once a week because they heard them or they saw them. And these are people normally that have livestock of some sort, or they have a deer farm that they like to deer hunt, and if they get a single trail cam picture, come kill this thing because they don't want it there.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I mean, we don't hunt enough areas often enough to keep the population at bay, I don't think.
Yeah.
Unless it's real close, real local, and you can just go drive there in 5 minutes and be hunting.
Yeah. I am supposed to shoot every coyote I see at the place I deer hunt. I have passed on a few during turkey season. I always have a hard time, like, All right, I'm gonna ruin this turkey hunt that I just sat down for with a coyote. I've passed on them with a gun with turkey, I don't know, probably half a dozen times.
Yeah.
With deer season though, I'm always like, well, I could shoot it with a bow and it doesn't affect my hunt. And I would. So I'm not like, again, I want to make it clear to your audience, I'm not opposed to shooting one.
Yeah.
I've just never been like super motivated to do it.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, if you ever get up to Michigan and you decide you want to go,
I would totally do it with that. Yeah. I would do it with guys like you all who could show me how it's done. I think it's really cool. I did a podcast on for Go Wild with our Gearbox talk show. And I had a guy named Anthony, and I can't remember Anthony's last name at the top of my head. But that dude blew my mind with the volume of coyote hunting he does, but also the gear. Like, he pulled out this like Jack Carr looking like Navy SEAL level of thermal optics helmet thing that was like, I think it was like 20 grand worth of thermals on his head. I was like, dude, you look like you just popped out of a novel. But it was super interesting to learn about. Again, you know, I think it's cool.
No, you're more than welcome. If you ever get up this way and you want to go try it for a night, let us know.
What part of Michigan are you guys in?
Do you know where Grand Rapids is?
Oh, yeah.
I'm only about 20 minutes from there.
And I'm cool. About half an hour, 45 minutes northwest of Grand Rapids.
Okay.
So what's next, or what are you working on for Go Wild? What do you see Go Wild becoming in, let's say, the next 2 years?
Yeah, so awesome. 10 years. Awesome question. I'll answer it in phases. So 2022 is the year of reemergence for us, in that we can see people again. And so we did a party for ATA. We threw a big party for VIPs, basically. It was our investors and brand partners. We had, I don't know, probably close to 100 people in a bar for ATA. That was kind of a mini intro to what the year would be. We went to SHOT. We did Pennsylvania and went up to the Great American Outdoor Show, which was insane. We made twice as much money as we projected. We saw tons of people. The booth was crazy. By Wednesday, that show set a record for volume, which is nuts, because that means it still had Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday to go. That show runs 8 days. So that was a huge play for us. We built our booth. We took all this inventory up there. I mean, we bought a trailer. We went all in on that thing. And I just signed up for us to go back to that. So it was, despite me and Braden both getting the flu simultaneously and packing up the booth in what was one of the most miserable 2 hours of my life. And that is not an exaggeration. I think I've actually blacked out like most of that, partially because I didn't even like remember it while it was happening. I was so sick. The show was great, but that was like, again, a reemergence back into the real world, right? Our grand, well, maybe not grand finale. I think it'll be the biggest thing we do this year though, is hosting this festival called Send It Slam. And you guys should totally come down to this if you can. July 9th is the show. We'll get you in there on a media pass if you want to come down and do some podcasting or something. But there's an archery competition. And so we're going to have about 180, somewhere between 70, 80, 100 archers. I don't know exactly how many yet. If we get enough demand, we may open up another course and do a couple hundred archers. But your archery ticket gets you through 25 to 30 targets. It's kind of like a total archery challenge, but a little less... it's a little less intense, not intense. I haven't done an attack, but I hear it's just like, you know, it's you're competing, right? And like, this is more like a golf scramble, you know, it's kind of like fun. We're just trying to keep it low level. It's honor system. If you score a certain score, your name goes into a raffle. There'll be some big door prizes. After that though, you'll come over to the concert venue, which is really close to where we're doing the archery, on the Louisville waterfront. And we've got the amphitheater there that we're going to have. I've got Country Boy Brewing. It's going to be the beer provider of the show. They work a lot with Kentucky Fish and Wildlife. They're really passionate about conservation. We are going to have food trucks galore. We're going to have the Boy Scouts there on site teaching kids marksmanship. So you'll be able to, like, your kid for free can learn to shoot a BB gun and learn safety protocol. Likewise, Raising Outdoors is going to be there teaching archery for kids. We'll have a multitude of brands there that you can meet and buy product from if you want to. We will have five different music acts, starting with Dalton Mills and Dave Shoemaker, who both are out of Eastern Kentucky, where I'm from. I actually used to play in a band back home, and me and Dave would play the same house parties growing up. So Dave's a dear friend of mine. And then it moves into Abby Hamilton, Justin Wells, and the headliner is Cole Chaney. So this is, you guys may not know these group now, but I'll tell you, I'm a music nerd. Cole Chaney is kind of like the next coming of Tyler Childers. He's a very good songwriter. We've got a Send It Slam playlist. So I would encourage your audience, if they're within a 5-hour drive, which you guys are in that range, 5.5 to Grand Rapids, I think, from Louisville, it's going to be worth it for the weekend. We are going to have even more stuff like cornhole and that kind of stuff around. If it's going to be a family event, you know, trying to get people out for the day, to have some fun, be able to blow off some steam, connect with other Go Wild members. It's going to be a chance for us to meet all these podcasters like you guys, who I end up talking to and never really getting to meet face to face. So that's our big thing for this year. Moving forward, the thought is that we'll do this again here next year, but then we'll add another city to it. So probably a Texas or somewhere south. We've got a big audience in Texas. It's our number one state. So we'll probably do that again. As we grow, I think eventually we're going to have a retail component where you can come in and shop, and it'll start small. And that'll probably happen. It's kind of happening now because we have to sell fishing, but we're not really promoting it. It's not something like, there's no point to coming in right now because it's a very small store. It's like a third of the size of my basement right now. Over time, though, I do think that'll get bigger. And then on the app itself, there's some things, you know, I want to be able to do Facebook groups. People ask us for that all the time. I don't have a big enough team to be able to tackle some stuff. Like, we could do that if we dropped everything else. And for me, like, the surest way for us to die is to go try to replicate what Facebook does. You can't out Facebook. They have 60,000 employees. They make $22 billion a quarter. And so whatever we did with that, if we make Facebook groups, the first thing out of somebody's mouth is going to be say, well, I can't do this and I can do that on Facebook. So we've also just done small tests, and like, it's not what people think it would be. It's not going to be the great flood of people leaving Facebook to go to Go Wild. People use Facebook because those groups are really close to where a platform where they already like to be. And so if I haven't won you from Facebook to give us a little bit of your time, it's unlikely you're going to leave your precious group to come over to us. But we want to do that kind of stuff. There's a few other things in that vein that I think we'll do over the coming years. But really, like, as the company scales, I admire companies like Black Rifle, who do stuff that's absurd. And you would say, like, why on earth would they do that? Like, you know, hosting some of the events they do, they're really big into NASCAR and they understand branding. And we're trying to really bring our digital product into the real world. You know, we want to have real life connections, which is why we're doing a concert festival. Like, that's like with archery. It's really kind of crazy. I mean, we went through 4 venues before we would find somebody to even host us, because they're like, you're doing what? You want to have booze and archery and families? Like, this is insane. We're not doing this. So, you know, we like being out there, and I think we'll continue to push the buttons there. I mean, I could see a Send It Slam that's firearms, you know, that is, you know, not at all archery related. We might do one that's fishing, but, you know, keeping those in the Go Wild family umbrella is really on our radar.
Yeah. And I mean, Go Wild, like I mentioned earlier, there's hiking trails, there's mm-hmm. all kinds of foraging. I think there's podcast ones. So it's very well set up for the outdoors person. And everybody, like myself, when I first joined Go Wild, I was like, man, it's another app that you got to learn the setup on it. You got to learn how to navigate it. And Facebook was easy because I've been using it for so long. But with Go Wild, you don't end up not being able to talk to anybody for 30 days because you talked about hunting.
Right.
So,
and I mean, the rewards, are legit. Yeah. I mean, you're going to post your deer and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I got a free sticker. Yeah. Oh, I got 25% off boots. Oh, I got $100 gift card or whatever it is, you know? So,
yeah. No, and the last reward I got after we started the Overdrive page, that was the shirt, and I got it in size that my son could wear.
There you go.
So nice. It worked out perfectly.
Nice.
But, well, Brad, why don't you tell everybody where they can find Go Wild and any closing thoughts you might have?
Yeah, so the app is at downloadgowild.com. If you want to shop first and just kind of see the gear, it's shopgowild.com. You know, I always tell people just the app's free. You get free shipping if you want to buy something. You're going to get free stuff from participating. Go in there and load your last couple seasons deer or whatever you've got coyotes. We got all that stuff in the trophy. Trophies are fun, you know. So load in some stuff, get some free points, and check it out. You'll get a message from me when you join. It is automated, but when I reply, that's really me. We do that to open up a window of communication to people. And it is really cool for me to get to hear that people heard from us on this podcast or another. So let me know where you heard about the show or heard about the app. Always appreciate that. You know, from there, Go Wild is on all the social channels. If you're not quite convinced to download our app yet, I can't really say more than I've said in the last 90 minutes to convince you. But if you want to follow us, we're on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff. So. You know, check us out there. I personally, I am active on LinkedIn, TikTok. I'm a founding.father. And then you'll find me on Go Wild because we're eventually going to get you guys to Go Wild.
Yeah. You need to be on Go Wild if you are an outdoorsman of any sort. It's basically free speech for us, finally.
That's right.
So thank you so much, Brad, for taking the time. We appreciate it. We've almost 2 hours down here talking to you, so hopefully you didn't have more plans to do tonight, but I guess I'm not.
No, this was it.
This one.
yeah, no, you're done.
All righty. Well, thank you so much, Brad. Thank you, Kevin, for taking the time. With that, we're going to wrap up this episode, and we will see you all next week on the Overdrive Outdoors podcast.